podcast party to slay a dragon.
My friends, if you do this for me, for us, for Holdenshire, for Endura, I will name you knights. I cannot afford to reward you well with gold, but I can shower you with honor. What say you?
Malibu looks straight at Belton and stares at him.
Belton looks at Malibu and says, "Hey, I gotta go to the bathroom. I'll be right back." And then runs to the nearest possible place that he may have to go to the bathroom in.
Malibu's literally gonna follow him. Boom, 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 boom. Just right on his tail.
Oh, well, you know, sometimes nature calls. We'll certainly try. We'll do our best.
Belton would run outside, probably in the direction of the nearest outhouse.
You run out into the hot and steamy summer night. You notice that you're sort of running past Maiko and Wendy Wenda and Gorp, who are kind of crowded along with several other Hengistbarians to watch your return and report to the Pembertons. Maiko's mouth is open and he reaches up one hand towards you as you rush past him. And you hear Gorp say, "Where's Uncle Belton going?" And Maiko says, I don't know. I don't know, Gorp. I don't know.
Malibu runs by them and waves and goes, "Hi, Maiko. Hi, Gorp." And just follows Belton.
Belton, realizing that there is no facility and then seeing his family, turns in one direction, then turns in the opposite direction. He sees all out of sorts. And then he just sort of runs to the nearest sort of clearing of trees and just sits down on the ground and begins to stop himself from hyperventilating as best he can.
Dragon. First it was the escape. Then there was the witch. Then there was the cult. Then there was this kobold thing. And now there's a dragon. There's a dragon. Of course there's a dragon. Why? They want to kill a dragon and they want me to kill a dragon.
Belton. He sits down next to you. Let's go be heroes. Come on. We'll be knights or nobles.
Malibu,
you're giving me a massive headache.
Sorry.
Listen, Malibu, I'm not the hero type. I do things for my own well-being. I do them for gold. I'm not what you would consider to be a good and upstanding person. I don't see myself just sort of running in the direction of a dragon with a sword.
We'll walk.
Malibu, listen.
Yeah.
Okay?
He stares right at your mouth.
I am no dragon slayer.
Okay, I'll do it.
Great.
Come on, Let's go. I try to lift him to his feet.
Belton would essentially try to pull Malibu down. As best as he can. Yeah, I know, right? It's going to be a real challenge here.
Contested strength athletics checks.
Okay.
Oh, Malibu crit failed with a 1 for a total of 6.
Guess what? Belton naturally just got a 6. So.
Oh, my God.
There's a moment framed under the starlight above Hengistbury of an Eladrin and a halfling pulling on each other fruitlessly. Belton not dragging Malibu down, Malibu not able to lift Belton to his feet, and we will re-roll to see if the tide shifts in one direction or the other.
Get up.
Are they out of the vision of...
They ran Brand? Out of the... So we'll leave it there okay. for a second. They ran out of the building. Lord Pemberton looks up at you, Violet, and he says, "I'm sorry, perhaps I misjudged your new friends, Miss Violet."
"No, you didn't. We've just been through a lot recently. It's been very stressful. Don't worry, they'll find their courage and strength again in no time. Meanwhile, Ariadne and I here are ready. We're ready to try and defeat this dragon for you. So don't worry, we can do it. Right, Ariadne?"
"We absolutely can for Tlingbit. And they'll be fine, probably."
Lord Pemberton says, "Tell Belton not to worry. I know perhaps better than most." He exchanges a glance with Lady Sybil. "What it is not to answer when destiny calls." Brand Torek hobbles up, leaning heavily on his 2 crutches, and he says, "Ariadne."
"Father?"
"You ain't going to the desolation."
"Yes, I am. And you will not stop me."
He says, "I can't stop you. You've proven that tonight.
but fact is, you have a duty here. He reaches into his pocket and holds out his hand to you, palm up, and gleaming in the center of his palm is the sheriff's badge of Hengistbury.
Oh. I look at it with awe and surprise, since he would never give this to me normally, because it's his life's work, and say, as much as I want to take this, save it, and give it to me when I return with Talingbit, I will succeed, for although these individuals may be anxious, or maybe that one's puking over there, they're very tough. They will be fine, and I will return to you and take up being sheriff. I will carry your banner and protect our people, but first I need to save our people.
He says, Ariadne, the Torex have always kept this land safe. Jael's dead. The other deputies are slaughtered. For me, could be weeks until I recover, if I'm ever the same after this. If you don't take a stand here in Hengistbury, if you don't keep this place safe, there ain't going to be nothing to bring Talingbit back to. Do you understand?
I know you think that. I know you believe that. I look around as I say this, but the people here have been through so much hardship and so much joy. You are underestimating those around you, our community. Before we head off, how about you and I set some precautions? Because there is nothing that will stop me from going, and there is absolutely nothing that will stop me from coming back to you. Father, I need you to trust me.
Of course I trust you. He puts the sheriff's badge on the, it's kind of like a nave where you're having this conversation. There's a little semicircular railing around it. He just rests the badge on the railing and he says, well, whether you want the job or not, he kind of inclines his head so that you should like step towards him and a little bit away from Violet and the Pembertons.
I do so.
He says, Brockendale Castle is within Hengistbury borders, so I reckon there ain't no conflict there. Whichever duty you choose to take up, you should at least escort your friends there on this mission for Lord Pemberton. But keep your eyes open in that place. They used to live there, was the seat of Hengistbury. He looks over towards the Pembertons. 25 years ago they left, and they ain't ever set foot there since. Something in Brockendale Castle scares them. They're sending your friends back for that scabbard because they're desperate. So the dragon scares them even more. But there's something wrong enough about Brockendale that's kept them from going home for 25 years. Whether you're the new sheriff or not, it's worth finding out what it is they left behind that they're so scared of.
At this, I look at him with all of my hope and love. And then I look down at the badge and I run my fingers over it. And I pick it up and pin it on.
He nods slowly. Lord Pemberton says, well, Violet, we certainly appreciate your experience and assistance in this matter. If your other friends aren't equal to the task, perhaps you might find new ones who could help.
Oh, that won't be necessary. Don't worry. I know this might be a little unfortunate to see at this juncture, but I urge you to put your mind at ease as much as you can and have faith. Mort believes in us.
Mort will pop his head out of my pocket and an ear will fall off.
Oh my god. I don't think Ariadne's ever seen Mort.
Oh, really?
No.
Would you like to describe Mort for Ariadne?
Oh, you seem surprised. Have you not met Mort?
No.
Lord Pemberton visibly pales.
Oh, don't worry. Come on, Mort.
And Mort will jump up onto my hand and he will proffer up his ear and I will pick up his ear and go, Risaccio! And his ear will stick back on. It'll be good as new. And by good as new, I mean a zombie mouse. He's an undead mouse.
He's a very good friend. He's very helpful. He scouted many a dark corner for us. Once he went into a big bone pile. It was very impressive. We didn't know what would be in there. He just jumped right in. Right, Mort?
Pemberton points one gloved finger doubtfully at Mort and looks over at his wife. Is that, do we? And Lady Sybil says, don't worry. Adventurers are all known for their eccentricities. It's just her thing.
I let out a squeal of delight, like so uncharacteristic, because Mort is so unbelievably cute.
That's right.
And now all I want to do is hold this mouse.
Dead mouse.
So
yeah, I was going to say.
It doesn't matter. Mouse. It's a cute dead mouse that just brought its ear back.
So, is it falling out yet?
Mort, would you be okay if Ariadne pet you?
And I think he would say yes, so I will hold him out, and you can give his head a little scratch if you want.
Oh, Mort, you are so cute. You are so cute. I think you're the team leader, right? You make sure everyone gets home safe?
Yes.
Oh.
Right.
Meanwhile, the tug of war between Belton and Malibu continues. Let's have round two of that athletics face-off.
All right. There we go. I got a 19. That was a natural 20.
Woo.
An 18.
18. So
Malibu is stronger than Belton, but Belton fights dirtier than Malibu. So Belton, you notice that Malibu is leaning backwards. Like, he's put his full weight against you, leaning backwards and pulling on you and sort of leaning at a 45 degree angle. And you just hook your foot up beneath one of his heels and trip him. And because he's off balance, he just falls on his ass. And the two of you are sitting on the ground, holding hands and staring at each other.
I do not like wrestling with you. I think it is a waste of my time. You are very strong. Listen, Malibu, why do you want me to come with you?
Malibu looks down at the ground and he says,
because if you don't come, I'm going to die. I almost died twice today. And I just, who's going to help me?
Damn it. Belton sort of kicks a pile of rocks, looks back at the prone form of Malibu and offers a small hand. He braces himself and does the best he can to pull the lunk up back onto his feet.
I think Belton, having been a halfling his entire life, has learned how to use leverage.
Yeah, in lots of different ways, I would think.
Yeah. And Malibu, you're somewhat surprised as he kind of finds two stones to like use as kickstands. Puts his feet against them, braces both his feet against them, and pulls you up to your feet.
Malibu's hand feels a little cold, colder than normal.
Yeah, I look down and I go, you're right there?
I think we'll know tomorrow, but you're coming, right? Because I don't want to die.
Belton rolls his eyes. He's like, all right, but if I die, you better believe I'm coming back as some kind of weird spirit, and I'm just going to haunt the hell out of you for the rest of your life. And you, Eladrin, you guys have long lives. So that's a long time.
Deal. And I give him a big hug and squeeze him really hard.
God, jeez.
Let go. We're going to be heroes and nobles.
Well, not if you kill me first.
Sorry.
Let go.
Let's go.
Whew.
There is a voice from behind you. You turn to see a figure silhouetted against the backdrop of the light woods. Tall human woman. She steps forward, a light cloth cloak swirling around her heels. You see that it is Lady Sybil Pemberton. She says, Mr. Freedew, I'm afraid you dropped this right out of your pocket into my hand. And she holds out her hand to you. Hilt first is the dwarven dagger.
How did you...
You notice looking at her hand, Belton, not the hand of a lifelong noble.
Yeah.
Like it's got some calluses and some muscle and a scar running along the back of it.
My eyes trace from the dagger up to her eyes. Lady Pemberton, if you don't mind my saying so, you have perhaps a little skill with ways of trickery, shall we say?
She says, everyone who grows up in Last Chance learns a bit of sleight of hand. Here, you wanted that identified?
Oh, very much so. Since my friend Malibu here has convinced me with his charming, guileful ways to accompany him on his imminent death quest, I will be more than happy to accept your services in understanding what the heck this thing does.
I'm not going to die, though. He might die, but I'm not going to die.
Thank you, Malibu. Yeah. Yes. Yeah, definitely going to keep you alive. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Puts his arm around him.
She smiles thinly at both of you. This short steel blade is glowing in the moonlight with its own faint blue light. She traces her index finger along the dwarven runes that are carved on the guard. She says, it says, Forge God's Finger in Dwarven. She hands it to you. It's forged by Clan Troia, dwarven clan that formed the backbone of the Forge God's priesthood, the lost dwarven city of Deephall Point. This weapon was created by a Troia smith in the holy fires of that city's ancient forges during the last flowering of dwarven culture there. Guard it well. There are no more blades coming out of Deephall Point. not since it fell to Siroth.
So, this is a magic dwarf dagger?
Yes, Belton. A magic dwarf dagger.
That's called Forge God's Finger.
Even I knew it was magic, so...
Well, yeah. Thank you, Melbo. I thank you, Lady Pemberton, for your magical use of your special ways to understand what this magic thing... Does it hurt when really bad when you stab someone with it? I mean, you tell me.
Yes, Belton, all daggers hurt.
Well, I know that, but like super, super, like hurt, bow, ow, that hurts, you know, that kind of thing.
Yes, this one hurts worse than most daggers.
Okay. But Belton,
while it's a weapon, I've heard that the smiths of Troia sometimes use their daggers as keys. So you may want to keep that one close by should you ever find the door it opens.
So it's a knife and a key. Okay. Okay. Noted. Noted. Forge God's Finger, knife and key.
Mechanically, it is also a dagger plus one, Matt.
Cool. Thank you. All right. Thank you very much, Lady Pemberton. I appreciate this.
The least I can do. Now, it's been a very long night.
Telling me.
She looks at some of the smoke that's still rising from the docks. She says, perhaps you'd better get some rest, eh?
Yes. Thank you for your hospitality. I guess we'll sort this out in the morning. Oh, gosh. I left the other two. We left the other two inside.
She holds up her hand to silence you. I understand you're accompanying them to Brockendale Castle? She raises one eyebrow. It's a question.
Yes.
I knew we could count on you, Belton. Have a good night. She turns and sweeps away from you.
Belton looks up at Malibu and says, Malibu, I just want to let you know something.
Huh?
However this thing sorts itself out, I better make a lot of money from this.
Hi, everybody. Hope you're enjoying episode 5 of Podcast Party to Slay a Dragon, presented by Cast Party and EN Publishing. The show will be back shortly for the second part. For this series, we're using Level Up Advanced 5th Edition to enhance the classic D&D 5e experience. For more information on these cool new rules and enhancements for your 5th edition D&D games, visit levelup5e.com. That's levelup5e.com. You can also purchase this adventure as part of Level Up A5E's awesome new release, To Save a Kingdom, available in both hardcover and PDF formats. If you're a new listener and you're enjoying this adventure, you should also check out Podcast Party Descent into Avernus as we travel to hell and hopefully back in a quest to save the stolen city of Elturel from eternal damnation. We have more than 3 years of episodes available now, and new episodes come out right in this feed. Last year, you helped make possible our upcoming Secrets of the Blind Palace actual play series by making Secrets of the Blind Palace go platinum on Dungeon Masters Guild. Well, now another of Tal's adventures, Attack on Coppercoil, is just 2 sales away from going gold. That's like platinum, but less impressive, but still great. So, we have another proposal for you. If Attack on Coppercoil goes gold on DM's Guild before we begin recording Secrets of the Blind Palace, then that miniseries will become a little longer and will include actual plays of both Secrets of the Blind Palace and Attack on Coppercoil. It's a 4 to 7 hour D&D 5e adventure for characters level 1 to 4. Purchase of both the PDF version or the Roll20 PDF version bundle will count towards making the Coppercoil cast happen. Follow the link in the show notes to purchase or grab it at DM's Guild. Would you like to accept an insanely dangerous dragon slaying assignment like our heroes did in this episode? Cast Party's professional dungeon masters are available to hire for online games. We have games for kids as well as adults, and our DMs can run almost any of the official Dungeons & Dragons 5th edition adventures, as well as third-party adventures and even some we've created ourselves. Details at cast-party.com. Do you ever feel like you have a great visual picture in your head, but you need a little help putting it into words? Well, with a subscription to Describe, you can access thousands of descriptions of monsters, spells, locations, and more, as well as maps, music, and sound effects to enhance your games. Only at Describe.com. That's DScryb.com. Would you like 10% off that subscription? Follow the link in the show notes and use the discount code CASTPARTY, all one word and all caps, to save 10% on your first subscription. Check us out at cast-party.com. Follow us on Facebook at CastPartyD&D, on Twitter at CastParty2, on Instagram at Cast_party, on TikTok at Cast_party, or on Threads at Cast_party. As always, we're offering monthly free adventures with our Dungeon Masters. These free games fill up quickly, so if you'd like to grab a spot, you should join our email list or our Discord server. Links to both can be found at cast-party.com. You can watch episodes of Podcast Party on YouTube, complete with artwork, battle maps, character portraits, and even a little bit of animation. Check out the show notes for the link or visit cast-party.com. If you enjoy Podcast Party, please follow the show, rate us, and leave us a review. We'd love to hear from you. Message us on social media or email us at info@cast-party.com. Follow us on Facebook at CastPartyD&D, on Twitter at CastParty2, on Instagram at Cast_party, on TikTok at Cast_party, or on Threads at Cast_party. Thanks very much for listening, and now back to the adventure in Holdenshire.
It's the following morning. Castle Brockendale looms over you, its skeletal ruins stark against the gray sky. Vines and other climbing plants have taken hold in the rough and broken stonework that litters the ground. For just an instant, you think you see a light in one of the empty, ruined windows on the second story, but it is gone just as quickly.
Did you see that?
My father said something to me about this castle before we left. The Pembertons abandoned it 25 years ago and have not once ventured back. They were so scared of something that had ended up taking residence. So just be wary. My father, brave man though he is, recommended extreme caution.
Did your father or Lord Pemberton tell you what it may be that they were so scared of?
Unfortunately, no. I think that the Pembertons have tried to keep this secret.
Oh, a secret scary thing. That's just amazing. Thank you.
That's very helpful of them. Yes, remind me to thank them when we get back. Did anybody see a light up there? Could have sworn
no.
I saw something.
Where?
Up there in that window.
How far up is that window?
On the second story. So the window is, you know, maybe 20 feet up. And you notice that the second story looks mostly collapsed. Like, you can't imagine that a lot of the infrastructure on the second floor of this building is still in one piece.
Mm-hmm.
You are in a ruined courtyard in front of the castle. There are crumbling walls to the east and to the west and slightly south of you. Probably once was a carriage house. You can see sort of collapsed, rotting wood flush against the wall of the castle in front of you. But any of the other outbuildings that were made of wood seems to have completely crumbled and collapsed.
Well, should we look around the joint? Not like inside of it, but at the very least, you know, make a perimeter around, see what we can find.
Yes, that sounds like a good idea.
Shall we split up into twos?
No. The first rule of reconnoitering is yes. You never split the party, okay?
Yes, quite.
Yes, but in the essence of time.
Oh, time. We've got plenty of it. And Belton will just walk around to the eastern side of the castle.
Okay, I'll follow.
Malibu's been very quiet. And what you notice about him is that his hair is almost completely white. Normally it's multicolors. But now it's almost completely white and his eyes are like crystally blue and he's just very quiet and following along.
Belton.
What?
Belton.
What?
I'm concerned about Malibu.
Have I ever seen Malibu with white hair and blue eyes before?
It's more of a question for Malibu.
I would say no. Malibu is usually very colorful. His hair does change color. And his eyes will also change color kind of to match his hair. And also he always has these like little vines that grow around his one weapon, the handle, and they're all dead right now. What were green leaves yesterday are all just like brown withered or just the stems.
As this conversation is taking place, you're making your way along the crumbling eastern wall of Castle Brockendale, which so far, at least along the eastern side of the keep, seems pretty intact. And you also don't see any ground floor windows.
Okay.
I assume we're being quiet, right? Everyone.
Yeah.
If you would like to be quiet, I'll ask for a group dexterity stealth check, please.
Okay. Yes, good. I would love to be quiet.
The castle stands on top of a tor overlooking the town of Hengistbury, which is maybe just a couple of miles southeast and in the lowlands below you. So it's overlooking the town. You can see activity stirring in the town. There's still some trails of smoke rising from the fires where the kobolds raided yesterday. Some shell-shocked farmers heading out into the neighboring fields. But nobody is that close to the castle. And Ariadne, and as a native, and Belton, as at least someone who is frequented Hengistbury fairly often in recent years, you know this place has a discouraging reputation. It's the kind of place that where, like, children of Hengistbury will dare each other to, like, get within 100 yards of it and then run screaming away from it. Just has a fell aspect.
Okay. For stealth, Violet rolled a 13.
Ariadne rolled a 4.
Belton rolled a 19.
Malibu rolled a 14.
I'm going to call that a group success.
Yay.
Hallelujah.
I guess as we're walking along, Belton will sort of stop for a sec, look over at Malibu, and just say, Malibu.
Yeah.
You all right? Yeah, looking fine. A little paler than usual.
He looks a little confused.
What's wrong with that?
There is nothing wrong with, you know, being pale. I'm just saying you're not, you know, your usual colorful, vibrant self.
Oh, I'm dead. Not dead. Winter.
As Malibu says winter, it's pretty gray, overcast day, and an unseasonably cool rain for late summer, not heavy, but persistent and chilly, starts to sprinkle down on you as you pass to the northeast corner of the building.
You do that?
Do what?
Frigid rain.
Oh, no, I don't even really notice it. The cold doesn't bother me that much.
I love winter. I think winter's one of my favorite seasons. It's quiet, and it's peaceful, and you want to stay in and do some quiet things by yourself and do some thinking. So, I think it could be quite beautiful to be in a wintry phase. I just want to make sure that you're not going somewhere sad in your mind. Somewhere that isn't a peaceful sadness, if you know what I mean. If you need any help, just promise that you'll ask us for help, okay?
As you say this, he kind of looks up for the first time, and he looks right at you, and he smiles.
Oh, thank you. One day affects the next, you know? So, like, what happened yesterday, I almost died. I think it put me in winter. But I like what you said. That was great. And it made me feel better.
Good.
I'm okay.
Oh, good. All right. Onward.
There are a few morning birds kind of picking worms back here in the scrubby grass behind the castle, still wet with dew. But you don't see any signs of life. And again, now looking at the northern wall of the castle, no breaks, no windows.
I have this kind of interesting ability called Sense for Secrets. It's basically a sense for finding hidden things like tricks, okay, traps, secret doors, or unusual features of a non-magical nature within 30 feet of me on an unobscured surface that I can see. It says I can't use it twice on the same area, but it doesn't have any other kind of restrictions.
I mean, if you'd like to sort of use that to investigate the out exterior walls of the castle, I'll keep in mind.
Yeah, I mean, if you're saying that just naturally, as we're looking closely and carefully at the outside of the wall, that we haven't found anything, part of it is this, you know, him trying to keenly listen to this sense, this innate sense for secrets that he has, and he hasn't found anything yet.
I wouldn't say that you detect any secrets, Belton, but standing here, you're kind of at the northeast corner of the building.
Yeah.
You notice that there is a tower structure above this corner that is actually three stories, and it's the only surviving part of the castle that is three stories. It looks like there were once four towers, but only this one at the northeast corner seems intact.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, I guess we'll just continue around the other side here.
Okay.
We're just sort of carefully picking along the wall, the western wall now.
You complete your perimeter search of the castle, diligently checking for any other flaws or entrances or unusual features on the outside. You find yourself back in the courtyard, having checked the eastern, western, and northern walls.
Well, we know we gave it a try.
The only thing you've really been able to ascertain from examining the exterior is it seems like of the second story, It seems like that northeast area is the most intact.
Mm-hmm.
But beyond that, you're not able to ascertain much about what's going on inside the castle from your exterior reconnaissance.
On the eastern wall, there's some kind of a protrusion.
It looks like a chimney, Belton. So there, you surmise there might be a fireplace inside.
Okay, that makes sense. Well, I guess since Malibu has just reached up and opened the door in front of us, what do we see?
The front door swings open with a loud creak. And it's slow and stiff, Malibu, like it hasn't been opened in some time. There is a sky blue marble floor covered with rocks and debris. Looks like you're looking into a small foyer. There are crumbling statues of cranes and fancifully rendered grasses out of stone, some of which are cracked and crumbling. It's a 15 foot wide by 10 foot long foyer. And there is another interior door directly across from you, just like 10 feet across the room from you.
When Malibu looks in, does it look like the foyer of a fancy house, or does it look more like a gatehouse, like with murder holes and things like that?
Make a intelligence culture check, Malibu.
Can I help him with that since I grew up here?
Sure. So you can make that with advantage, Malibu.
That is a 17.
With a 17, it looks like it was designed for aesthetics, not for defense, Malibu.
There's another door. And Malibu's going to step in.
This is a lot of damage for a place that's only been abandoned for about 25 years.
Oh, like somebody ransacked it?
It's in rougher shape than you might expect.
Oh, So when he notices that, he goes to take a step in and then he stops and he goes, Belton, you should probably go first, right? You're the boss.
Boss, okay, sure. Belton gingerly steps into the front hallway, gestures to the others to join him.
Yes, I'll take up the rear.
In preparation, I just want to have at least one blade drawn, since my father's warning has been very, very much running through my head.
Got it.
I guess Belton will listen at the door that's next to him right now, the one that's just right inside this little entryway.
So that is the interior door that I mentioned earlier that was directly across from the exterior door? And you can go ahead and make a wisdom perception check.
Malibu's going to lean over right over top of him and do the same thing.
Both of you can make wisdom perception checks.
Malibu got a 9.
Belton got a 10.
Belton, you listen for a few moments and there is dead silence from the other side of the door. And then very close to your ear, as if somebody is leaning against the other side of the door, you very clearly hear a female voice say,
"You're unwelcome."
I don't hear anything. I heard some woman say, "You're unwelcome." I don't even know what that means. I'm assuming that it means that we shouldn't be here, but...
Oh, well, that makes sense based on what Ariadne said.
There is a resounding thump on the other side of that door, Belton, like someone's pounding it with their fist.
Whoa! Okay.
The door shutters.
What if you knock? Knock very nicely.
Sure.
There's no response.
You have the key, right? The key, knife key, right?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I don't think this is for that. I think this is for some dwarven door. This is not for this joint. I think that's for something else. Oh. But good idea. Let's hold that off for later.
I have an idea. It may be a bit silly, though. Do you mind if I step forward?
Yes, please, by all means, Ariadne. And he will move off to the side to let her to the door.
So I bang on the door with like a closed fist on the side, like... In the order of the law, this is your sheriff speaking, this door will be opened. I will count to three. If you do not open it, then it will be opened for you. One, two.
I don't know if this is a good idea.
The door flies open.
Oh, well, thank you. That worked.
And there is a 40-foot completely empty corridor in front of you, Ariadne, with doors on the east and west and one at the far end to the north of you.
As I step in, I'm just going to say thank you so much for letting me in. We will leave you as much in peace as humanly possible, and thank you. Please try not to injure us overmuch.
All of you hear a voice, echoing, almost triplicated female voice filling the corridor.
You're not the sheriff. I don't know you.
I call out, as of last night, my father passed the sheriff... sheriffship?
Sure. I mean, you're improvising.
Yeah. The sheriffship over to me, as you can see right here on my badge. My father is currently injured, and I am doing whatever I can to ensure that the community is safe. I would love to introduce myself to you more formally.
Sheriff Torek. Arrowin Torek.
No, I am Ariadne.
You recognize that as your grandfather's name?
Ariadne Torek. It has been a number of years since my grandfather was sheriff, and I'm trying to make good changes around town so that all who may wish to live here may do so in peace, as you can see by my very different companions.
Your grandfather took their money. Your grandfather knew it was a lie.
Wait, what?
Uh-oh.
Please tell me so I may fix whatever wrong there was.
There's no response.
Ariadne, is there something you should be telling us before we go into this place?
Did you hear all of that?
I heard every word, and I am petrified right now.
Is that Spectre saying that they took the Pemberton's money?
That would make sense. Well, we must right the wrong then. Please don't mind our entry, and we will do our best to get in and out without too much fuss and try to make wrongs right again, even if we have to take down this castle stone by stone. Unless you want it there. At which point, we'll leave it alone.
I think you should just go in.
I think the damage has been done. Let's just get in here.
Yeah.
You make your way into this rather narrow, sort of 5 foot wide, but like 40 foot long corridor. As I mentioned earlier, there are sort of asymmetrical doors, one east and west off of this corridor, and another one at the north end.
Well, we may as well start with the first one, yes?
Work our way down the hall?
Yeah.
Sure.
Yes. These are my deputies, as they have been deputized for this mission.
Can I get a badge?
No.
Oh.
Malibu looks sad again.
I whisper down to him, I don't have any more badges, but maybe we can have one made, a special one just for you.
Okay.
All right, so I guess we'll listen at the door to the west.
Wisdom perception.
I will do the same.
Malibu rolled an 18.
Belton got a 15.
There is silence behind the door to the west.
No noise is good noise. And he opens the door.
With that high roll, Malibu, while you're listening, you don't hear anything from the west. You hear a series of clicking noises from the east.
Oh,
that ghost must be working on its novel.
There's something over there.
Opening the western door, you see a line of lacquered wooden pews. They're all facing away from you as you step through the doorway. And there is a simple pulpit, stone pulpit, at the far end of the room, the eastern end of the room. This is no doubt a disused chapel. The ceiling above you is completely gone. There are leaves, like old rotting leaves, on the floor of the chapel. Pigeons are disturbed as you open the door and flutter upwards out of the gap in the ceiling. It looks like the entire second floor above this room is completely gone, and this space has been exposed to the weather for years.
Hmm.
Are there any fancy gold cups or bowls or anything on that altar down the other end of the room?
If you want to search the place, you can feel free to make a wisdom perception check.
I think Belton would not, actually. This is a little out of character for him. But considering he's absolutely scared shitless of this voice and whatever's attached to it.
Yeah. Ariadne also speaks up briefly and says, remember, you've been deputized.
He knows what this is, but he wouldn't understand why it's sacred or why you shouldn't mess with it. So he will look around. And he rolled a 23.
With a 23, Malibu, buried in a pile of rotting leaves, you find a dented steel cup and a steel plate with a face embossed on it. The face is a bearded man with leaves for hair and leaves for a beard.
Mm. Cousin of yours, Malibu?
I don't really have leaves. I mean...
Malibu?
Yeah?
Why don't you set that on the front altar?
Why?
Well, when I deputized you to gain us entry, it means that you have to follow the law, which unfortunately means that you cannot loot the place. So it's a leave no trace situation, except maybe to make it nicer.
Ariadne said she can't see you do it, so you have to be a little sneakier if you want to do it.
Oh.
Otherwise, you're sort of compromising her, as she has to enforce the law.
Okay.
I mean, it's wrong to steal things.
Right.
Right. Yes, absolutely. And Belton has this sort of faux look of horror on his face as he looks over at Malibu. It's a shame.
Malibu takes the cup and the plate and he goes to put it on the altar. But right before he does, he looks at Ariadne and he goes,
but I don't have a cup or a plate.
We can get you a cup and a plate. This one, I think.
And a badge.
Might be.
And a badge.
Yes, and a badge. And this one, I think maybe the lady of the house would prefer to keep.
Okay.
He brushes the dirt off them and the leaves, and then he places them onto the altar.
As you place it on the altar, you notice that there's a depression, like a plate-shaped depression with the same face embossed on it, on the altar. But there are several others. There are 8 other depressions, and the faces on all of those plates are different. Make an intelligence religion check, Malibu.
That's an 8.
Okay, yeah, you're not sure what these faces mean.
I want to put it in its right spot because I was just told to put it back and put it back nice.
I'm going to put it in its place. I'm going to put it in the spot right over the spot where the face is the same.
Okay, yeah, it fits there.
I'll just put the cup next to it.
Okay, I put them back.
You did a great job, Malibu. You were worthy of this deputy title.
Should we find the other plates?
Let's see if we can find them. Maybe we can return them later. Can I take a look around the room to see if there are any other plates here?
Sure. Wisdom perception check.
I got a 7.
You don't turn up any other artifacts in your search, Ariadne.
Okay. Well, let's keep an eye out for them. Maybe that would be a nice thing to do for the lady at the house who graciously opened her door to the sheriff and her deputies.
Okay.
Okay, moving on. Do we still hear clicking?
Make a wisdom perception check, Violet.
That's an 18.
So you do hear, and then it stops, coming from somewhere behind that eastern door.
If I take a best guess at what that is, like, different types of clicking I can imagine are pressing some sort of button, claws scrabbling on something.
Scrabbling would be accurate.
Okay.
Like something sharp scrabbling on stone, maybe.
Yeah.
There's something skittering around in there.
Well, let's not give it the opportunity to use that skittering paraphernalia to skitter all over us. I say we continue north.
Okay.
Okay. Yes.
I'm going to listen at this door to the north here. And I got a 17.
Silence from behind that door, Belton.
Hey, no noise. I'm going to open it if you guys are all right with it.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay, open the door.
It opens into a large hall, Belton. This probably would be the main hall of the keep. There are some fading, rotting tapestries. There is a threadbare, rotted rug, and the rug is in front of some sort of seat of office or throne. And then there are 3 banquet tables with benches arranged in front of the throne. And off to the sides, there are side tables, like perhaps might be used for serving during a feast or a gathering. There is a stone stairway in the northwest corner of this room leading down. And there is a spiraling staircase leading up, probably into that tower that you spotted from the outside, Belton. And the ceiling on the western half of this hall is also gone. So there are detritus. There's actually like a large fallen tree branch lying across one of the banquet tables. The tapestries and the rug have a lot of mold and water damage. There's stone and wooden debris strewn around the room. You also notice, looking to your right, Belton, that there is a door in the south wall as well, more towards the eastern side of the room.
All right. Well, this is the grand hall, it looks like. You know, oftentimes, knowing what I know about people in high political positions, people sometimes leave things behind that they may not necessarily have wanted to, usually in and around seats of office.
Belton will move towards the aforementioned seat.
Ariadne's not gonna look that way. She is gonna separately look for plates that have gods on them.
Yes, I'll also look for some plates.
As will Malibu.
Be a good moment for the people that are interested in plates to make another religion check. Intelligence religion.
Finally, a decent roll. A 16 for my religion.
Ariadne, you know, and Violet with a 20, you know as well, that the different plates represent iconography of different gods. The plate that Malibu found depicted a god called the Keeper, god of agriculture, nature, and wilderness. The other faces on the altar were all symbolic of different gods. There was the father, the fisher, a mother, the lover, the trickster, who you remember as Mercury's god. The chapel must have been a kind of tabernacle where offerings to a lot of different gods might have been made.
That's cool.
So Belton's just going to look around, searching in and around this throne / seat of office here to see if there's anything interesting left behind or hidden compartments or anything like that.
You don't find anything like that, Belton.
Kind of lord doesn't leave something behind in his seat of office.
Stone and metal chair.
I'm just going to sit in the chair just to try it out.
Yep, very large for you. Clearly it was designed for someone human size. Your feet don't touch the ground.
I somehow feel very small right now. All right, not for me. Belton hops off the chair.
The voice says,
"That was his."
Oh, shit. Did you all hear that?
Did we?
Yes.
That was whose?
His. It was his.
But who are you referring to? A Pemberton?
Let's go look for these plates. In my gut, I feel like they should... They're important.
Is there a god of answering goddamn questions? Because I would love to find that plate.
Let's try a group wisdom perception check just for searching the room.
Okay.
All right. I got a 12.
I got a 6.
Malibu got a 20.
I got a 19.
You make a pretty thorough inspection of the room. You don't find any more plates. In the area where there's still a ceiling intact, the eastern side of the room, you do find many boot prints, tracing a pattern of frantic activity, heavy boot prints, and also softer ladies' prints like servants and soldiers and attendants decades ago, bustling frantically around in that area. Can make a wisdom survival check if you'd like to try to interpret further.
Is that for everyone?
Yeah.
Belton got a 15.
Violet got an 18.
Ariadne got a 7.
And Malibu got a 6.
Together with the relative absence of valuables on this floor, signs of a hurried evacuation.
Everybody was just trying to get out of here as fast as they could.
But why? I don't like it when people have to hurry to get out of someplace. That usually means something really bad.
Or they were unwelcome, as the lady of the house said to us before?
It's a little bit retroactive, but if I think back to the voice of the ghost saying, said that was his, when she said that was his, did she say it in a reverent way or a sort of disgusted way? Like, could I tell from the tone of voice how they felt about?
Make a wisdom insight check.
That's an 11.
Not sure.
Well, I suppose we'll just have to find out more as we go.
So, up or down?
Up or down.
Yeah, exactly.
we got a door over here, too.
That's where the scrabbling was.
I don't think we should take the opposite way into the scrabbling room.
Maybe I'm wrong about that, but I think it's the same room.
Perhaps we go up, since it's a little brighter up there?
Yeah, sure. Can always come back down.
Yes.
Preferably not in a hurry.
Right. I guess I'll scout ahead.
Be sneaky.
Steps on to the stairway going up. Should we re-roll stealth or are we...
This is a different enough area that you're entering. If your intention is to sneak, I'll need another group stealth check.
Dexterity stealth.
Yeah, dexterity stealth.
Belton rolled a 19.
Malibu rolled a 14.
Violet got a 4. I think she's like, Mort, what do you think we're going to find upstairs? I think there's going to be a library, and I'm very excited about the library. Probably some of the books are fine. Oh, sorry.
Ariadne got a 19.
Hey.
All right, so as a group, you make your way carefully up the stairs. The stairs are wooden and quite creaky, so you're forced to move slowly and deliberately up this worn stairway at the back of the main room. A portion of it has deteriorated and fallen away. Belton, are you in the lead?
I am.
Okay, so what you can see, Belton, is that it continues to spiral up. There is a landing on the second floor. The stairway keeps going up to the third floor, but it looks increasingly deteriorated as it spirals up to that third floor. Who is after Belton?
Malibu.
And after Malibu?
That's Ariadne.
Belton, you move out into a second floor landing. There is another threadbare carpet, this one less weather damaged, as there is an intact roof on this tower. There is a pile of clothing against the western wall, Belton, and what looks like a sort of serving table against the eastern wall that has a single drawer that can pull out of it. And there is a fireplace against the northern wall.
I think there's going to be a plate in here.
Be my guest. Give it a search.
Malibu will open it up.
You pull it open, Malibu. The only thing in the drawer is what looks like a partially burned book, Malibu. It has a faded, dyed pink leather cover and yellowed pages, scorched.
He picks it up.
That's a shame.
And I don't want this here.
And he gives it to Violet.
Does it have a title on it?
You do not see a title.
Then I would just, I would open it and try to see if I can find anything useful, any words or pages that are intact.
It's full of handwriting. A lot of it is burned away and indecipherable, but you are able to make out several entries or partial entries. It looks clearly like it is a personal diary of some kind.
Okay, do you want me to read some of this?
Yeah,
please.
Okay.
15 Kleiner. Hounds got into the chapel this morning. Spill tallow and incense. Thank the Valar, no fire. Scraped up the wax from the boards. He stayed to help, touched my hand. Be careful, Eleanor. 23 Kleinath. Pheasant from the heath and glazed mushrooms from Weirwood's edge. He watched me. Who is this he? I say to myself. 1 Myrno. Chocolates in my pay purse this week. Shirasaw. I don't care. Tasted so good. 10 Myrno. The lady is out on a hunt. He stayed behind. Ill, he said. Called me to his room to clean up spilled wine. I stayed. Oh, unfortunately, this is illegible. Sounded like it was just starting to get good and it's illegible. Sorry, everyone.
Middle section of the book, you find a lengthy illegible section that likely spans months of entries.
I bet there were months of entries, but I'm both, sorry.
Wow.
10 Rinmarth. I'm showing. They're all talking. Not loud, but always. 2 Udaira. The lady knows. She's known for weeks. They'll take the baby when it comes. It will be theirs. He's beautiful. He'll get their name. They want to send me away with money, but the others all know. I won't live to wear the letter.
Oh, the scarlet letter?
I wonder if this voice is this woman whose baby they stole. That's terrible.
They stole a baby?
Well, it seems that they didn't want any of this scandal to get out, so she had the baby and they took the baby as their own.
There is a scrabbling and clicking sounds coming from the fireplace on the northern side of the room.
Guys?
He took the baby.
Guys! And Belton is just pointing at the fireplace, like, incessantly.
Do we see anything?
You look towards the fireplace, the clicking noises and scrabbling sounds are getting louder, as if something is climbing up the chimney.
Yes. I'm going to try to go down the stairs a little. Okay.
Malibu's going to take out his Morning Star, and he's visibly angry about that story, and he keeps mumbling, "They took the baby?"
Malibu, now is the time to run!
His shield's up, his Morningstar's back.
God damn it!
And it's at that point when a monstrous face, segmented eyes, feelers or tentacles protruding from its mouth, and a massive chitinous body launches itself from the chimney.
Uh-oh.
What type of eldritch cockroach is this?
Massive centipede-like creature. Repetitive clicking noises are the sounds of its many legs pulling itself up through the chimney into this room, and gross. It lets out a high-pitched inhuman shriek as it launches itself at Malibu, and we are in initiative.
Thanks very much for listening. This episode was Dungeon Mastered by Tal Aviazer and featured Carolyn Fox as Violet, Matt Gordon as Belton Freedew, me, Andy Canistra as Malibu, and actor, cosplayer, and costume designer Amber Heck as Ariadne Torek. You can follow Amber on Instagram at sunblade_cosplay. That's sunblade_cosplay. This episode was edited by Tal Aviazer and Carolyn Fox. Remember, if you enjoy Podcast Party, please follow the show, rate us, and leave us a review. Thanks very much for listening. We'll be back in 2 weeks with episode 75, holy cow, 75, of Descent into Avernus, and in 4 weeks with episode 6 of To Slay a Dragon.